There's a new neighbor in town. The Lutheran Federal Credit Union is open and ready to serve members of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Lutheran Federal Credit Union provides checking and savings accounts, home, car, and personal loans, on-demand mobile banking, 30,000 ATMs, and 5,000 in the co-op shared network. You'll find the modernized banking experience you need with excellent customer service and security you expect at LutheranFCU.org. LutheranFCU.org.
So I've taken the position, which is quite common among Catholics. I got a personal feeling about abortion, but the right rule for government is to let women make their own decisions.
Well, I'm going to ask him the same question that Lincoln put to Stephen Douglas, who essentially argued the same thing on slavery. Douglas said he was personally opposed to slavery, but thought each state should have the right to vote it up or down. So here's the question. Mr. Kane, why are you personally opposed?
Selective outrage. I know that I need to be mad because something wrong has happened. And that's true. But the last thing I'm going to do is have ownership of the problem as if I'm part of it.
New dads like fixing the issues of slavery.
Well, it's one of those things that often the boy cries wolf, right? And the boy is often Christians who might be inconvenienced in the exercise of their faith, might even be feel a little put out. They might feel a little, looked down on, maybe even they might say persecuted. Sometimes we even toss in the word martyr when no blood has been shed. And then you hear a story like we heard earlier this week of a real Christian's blood being shed there in front of the altar while he's on his knees. Muslim knife men come in and kill him in front of his small congregation, Father Jacques Hamel. Now there we're talking about, that's a little bit more than just feeling put out, being persecuted. Is Father Jacques Hamel a Christian martyr? And what do we think about Christian martyrdom, especially in terms of what the Bible teaches and what Christian history tells us? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Thursday afternoon, July the 28th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Pastor Hans Feeney joins us to talk about the murder of a Catholic priest in France and Christian martyrdom. He's written about it recently in The Federalist. A little bit later, Dr. James Hitchcock will join us to talk about Democratic vice presidential candidate Tim Kaine and Roman Catholic voters. We'll spend some time with Dr. Oz Guinness. He's recently written his latest book, titled Impossible People, Christian Courage and the Struggle for the Soul of Civilization. We'll talk about engaging both secularism and atheism. And then we'll round everything off today. A little update on the Democratic Convention from Mark Hemingway, whom we missed yesterday in our update. He's senior writer for the Weekly Standard. You can join us for the next 2 hours with your questions or comments, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, and the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Pastor Hans Feeney is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, and he's senior contributor to The Federalist and author of a recent column titled, No Matter How Many Priests ISIS Kills, They Can't Win. Hans, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me.
Is Father Jacques Hamel a Christian martyr?
Well, yeah, I think that's it's sort of an interesting question to ask because there are a couple different ways you can look at it. On the one hand, obviously we would say that martyrs are those who die confessing faith, who are put to death for their confession of Christ. And as I say in the article, I don't know anything about Father Hamel. I don't know what it is that he taught. There are certainly things that are confessed in the Roman Catholic Church that I would say are at odds with what the Scriptures ultimately teach and what it is that that Christ commands pastors and priests to confess. But really, I think in this instance, the reality is that the men who killed him didn't know what he taught either. So if he was a good and faithful Christian man, or even if he was just a man who was occupying that Christian office but was teaching false things, which I don't in any way assume is the case. But from the perspective of the men who killed him, they saw him as a representative of Christ, and they saw him and they recognized that that this Christian God whom they despise had sent him to preach forgiveness and to proclaim the forgiveness of sins through Christ, and that's why they killed him. And so in that sense, he's certainly a Christian martyr in that sense, that regardless of what he may or may not have believed, he was killed precisely because of what he was sent to confess.
How do Christians look at an incident like this where you can actually come out and say, look, not that we want them to, but they can kill all the priests and Christians they want to, they're still not going to win. What is it about Christian martyrdom that can allow you to say that?
Well, I think the analogy I've used before in my own congregation is it's a little bit like, I don't know if that show, if the show is still on, but that Antiques Roadshow that, you know, they used to have on PBS where people would go and they'd bring all this junk that they had from their attic and they'd find out if it was worth something. And it's a little bit like if you were to go to Antique Roadshow with this thing in your hand called Christianity. And if all of a sudden some guy ran up to you and started screaming at you that he'd give you $5,000 for what you had, and so then all of a sudden you kind of look at it and you're going, oh mate, this is probably worth a lot more than you thought it was. You know, maybe this was just kind of something you had laying around in the attic that wasn't really worth anything. And then certainly if someone started brandishing weapons and threatening to kill you if you didn't hand it over, then all of a sudden you'd realize, oh wow, this is worth a lot. And I think that's what martyrdom does for the Christian faith, is it wakes people up out of this slumber and out of this stupor where we don't recognize the gift that we've been given, and we don't recognize how wonderful this treasure is. We don't see how brightly this gift of the gospel shines. And so, as I talk about in the article, this kind of this just sort of milquetoast Christianity that's so common nowadays, where you either have a pastor who just gets up in the pulpit and golly gee, it would be nice if we could all treat each other better, or you have some guy who's kind of preaching prosperity and financial abundance, or someone who's preaching about social justice. This is all kind of evidence of the fact that we've been living in a world where no one has been screaming and shouting to take the gospel out of our hands, and so we just kind of stopped looking at it and stopped recognizing how precious this jewel was that Christ had given us. And so I think what persecution does is that sort of shrieking hatred of the church and that shrieking desire to rip out of our hands this thing that's there causes us to all of a sudden look down and really reevaluate how precious that gift is.
The irony is, and you deal with it in certain ways in your column as well, is that kind of Christianity that you described before, that kind of milquetoast Christianity, no one even asked them to forfeit the gospel. They just did it on their own.
Sure. Yeah, that is, I suppose, the irony of it is that, and this is kind of the strange sort of historical irony of this, is that what ultimately led to the end of widespread persecution in the Christians was Christianity itself. So, the more the church was persecuted, the more the church grew, and the more that the church grew, the more that the church began to influence society and individuals in society, which eventually influenced governments. So, you got to the point where you had governments that not only would protect Christians from persecution, but governments that themselves actually operated according to Christian principles and according to Christian doctrine. And what that ended up doing was it created a world where persecution just didn't happen, and that kind of violent hatred of the gospel that we saw manifest in Normandy just wasn't a regular occurrence. And it's a little bit like when God delivers the Israelites out of the wilderness into the promised land, and he implores them, I want you to remember this time in the wilderness so that you don't forget me and so that you don't think that you don't need me. And of course that doesn't happen, and very, very quickly they've forgotten their need for him. And I think a similar thing happens where God is so merciful that he blesses his church to be free of this kind of violent, relentless persecution. And we as Christians respond by no longer seeing the gospel as worth holding on to, because no one's trying to take it away from us anymore. And so, yeah, we voluntarily give up what it is that these murderers in France were trying to forcibly take from people.
Is part of your point, Hans, that if someone's sitting there in a Christian church hearing the milquetoast message, Christianity as just kind of another preferable, maybe even superior lifestyle choice, something like that, maybe they should ask themselves, is this worth dying for? Would I die for this?
Right. Yeah, I think that's what we're hoping and what we should really hope that people rediscover in the midst of this. And there's a good article on the Federalist today about that, basically about this question of, it's more kind of culturally looking at it, but is France going to rediscover Christendom, basically, and is France going to rediscover that they have a way of life and they have a culture that's worth defending and worth putting their lives at risk of defending? I think this is kind of the problem, is that I was watching this show with my wife on Netflix a little bit ago. We finally got around to watching this show called Broadchurch, which is kind of a murder mystery. It takes place in England. And I don't know if the Anglican priest who was on the show, it was meant to kind of be a typical depiction of at least how the average Englishman views the church and views the clergy. But it was just, it was very fitting for why we're in the situation that we're in. So the plot surrounds a young kid who is murdered, and the priest in the town keeps saying to people, well, you know, the church is just here to, we're here to comfort people whether you believe or not. Either way, we're here to help. And there's no sense of a man who speaks with authority, who speaks with the authority of Christ, simply saying, we understand why this happened. We know what evil is. We know what the answer to evil is. We know we have the truth. We have the gospel. We have something that you need, and you don't know what you're looking for. And the reason you are unable to deal with this tragedy is because you don't know the truth, and we're here to proclaim it to you. And without a world that can stand firmly on something, this is the global conflict that we're seeing, is that much of the Western world refuses to say Christianity is better than non-Christianity. Faith in Christ is better than not having faith in Christ. A nation that lives according to Christian principles is better than one that doesn't. And because we haven't been willing to do that, it's not like the rest of the world operates according to that principle. ISIS is very convinced that living according to their understanding of Islamic principles is not only far better, but is the only acceptable option for how to live. And that's how they're willing to fight. And until we can understand that we actually have something that's worth giving our lives for, it's going to be very difficult for Christians to actually cling to the faith during times of persecution.
It's axiomatic, but it's also clearly stated in Scripture that friendship with the world is enmity toward God. I believe that's the Apostle James, if I'm not mistaken. We see a very famous and some of the most successful, at least numerically successful, Christians like Joel Osteen, heralded. Everybody loves him. Who couldn't like Joel Osteen? He has the ear of the media and is incredibly popular. Doesn't look like he's a candidate for any kind of persecution. I just cannot imagine the Muslims wanting to spend much time worrying about him, since he doesn't seem to say much about Jesus in the first place.
Yeah, and I think that's in a lot of ways why it is that it's probably difficult for people to understand why tragedies like this happen. You know, I think one of the problems that at least Western Christians oftentimes have is when they see the Christian faith as it's just nothing more than a guy wearing a white dress on Sunday mornings giving kids noogies and telling them it sure is great to see him, and golly gee, it would all be nice if we could be a little bit nicer to each other. When that's all people see the church to be, it's difficult. Then you look at this outbreak of violence, and you just think, well, something must be going wrong. You know, it's sort of like if I came home one day, you know, and my wife, who's always a very sweet, kind, loving woman, if I came home one day and asked her how things were, you know, asked her how was your day, and she all of a sudden started throwing plates at me, my immediate reaction would be, oh, I must have done something wrong, because this is not at all the way that she normally acts. And so I think when people operate with this mentality, yeah, all religions are basically the same, all people are basically good, and then all of a sudden they see this outburst of violence from people in the world, and they go, there must be something else going on with that. There must be some explanation for why these guys want to do something that seems to be so unnatural. And but there's no natural explanation for it. The only explanation is the supernatural one, which just says that you're dealing with spiritual warfare here, and you're dealing with people who are under the control of the devil. And the reason they would want to storm into a church and murder an 84-year-old priest who had never done anything, never harmed any of them in any way, is simply because they despise the message that he preaches, and they're willing to give their lives to stop him from preaching it and to frighten others and frighten other people away from believing it. And there's no political explanation that can explain this. There's no sociological or economic explanation that would explain why people are driven to this. The only real true answer is that there's a real God and there's a real devil, and there's a real Christ and there's a real sin, and that these things are at war with each other, even as Christ has already won the victory.
At the end of your article, you have something very poignant to say. If you wouldn't mind, I'd like you to read the last paragraph of your article and to explain what you mean by it.
Sure. So I wrote, "I don't know if Father Hamill had the chance to speak any last words to his flock as the terrorists stormed into his sanctuary, but I do know that any faithful pastor wouldn't need to say much in his final benediction. To fulfill the final task of his job, all he'd need to do was look at the sheep he'd forgiven throughout the years and tell them, 'Don't be afraid. These men have come here to take our lives, but they're too late. Our lives already belong to Christ.'" And yeah, what I mean by that is, when a pastor does his job just faithfully throughout the years, so Father Hamill had been at this parish for, I think, 20 years, something of that nature. If you just do your job faithfully, every single week you're preparing people for this moment. Every single week you're preparing people for death, whenever it may come. So when you speak the word of forgiveness, when you tell people that their sins have been taken away, when you tell people, when you declare them to be at peace with God, when you give them the comfort of knowing that in the waters of baptism they've been claimed as God's own children, that in the sacrament of the altar they have been invited to feast on the righteousness of Christ that the devil cannot take away from them. In all of that, what you're doing is you are preparing people for the moment of their death. So that, I mean, this is why it is that we, for example, sing in the liturgy, that we sing the words of Simeon in our Lutheran churches after receiving the Lord's Supper. "Lord, now lettest thou thy servant depart in peace. Thy word has been fulfilled." So we're singing that we can now die in peace, so that if terrorists were to storm into our church and to take our lives, we would die with nothing on our tongues but the praises of our God, because we have his forgiveness. And so when a pastor just faithfully teaches the gospel to his people, proclaims the gospel to his people, gives them the forgiveness of sins, he's preparing them for that moment whenever it might come. And so there's not much else that you'd need to say. In an instance like that, you can just simply say, "Don't be afraid. These men have come here to take our lives, but they're too late. Our lives already belong to Christ."
Pastor Hans Feeney is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, senior contributor to The Federalist, and author of a recent column there titled "No Matter How Many Priests ISIS Kills, They Can't Win." We'll post a link to it under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Hans, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
When we come back, Dr. James Hitchcock joins us from St. Louis University. We're going to talk about Democratic vice presidential candidate who is, well, he's famous for having done a lot of work with the Jesuits, and he calls himself a devout traditional Roman Catholic, Tim Kaine, and Roman Catholic voters. Then Dr. Oz Guinness will join us to talk about engaging secularism and atheism, and we'll get an update on the Democratic convention with Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard.
Have skills as a coder, designer, writer, marketer, project manager, or are interested in building websites? Do you want to help the church proclaim Christ and Him crucified to the digital world that we live in? If yes, you should join our WordSites team. WordSites is a group of tech-savvy volunteers who help fellow Lutheran organizations build effective websites. Plus, we have fun while we're doing it. To submit your name or to learn more, visit WordSites.org. WordSites, your confessional Lutheran website, reformed.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Spiritual and religious. You're listening to Issues Etc.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Temptation, promiscuity, marriage, homosexuality. These are some of the issues addressed in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Sexual Morality in a Christless World. You can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org or find out more by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Learn the truth about sexual morality from a reasoned Christian perspective with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Sexual Morality in a Christless World.